It's Friday, May 30th, 2014, and welcome to episode 165 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Mike Joya.
And it's just us two today. Cindy is out about in the country. We actually can't track her down today, so
she's really been slacking.
She has. So we're going to have to get her back on. We'll get her back next time and see what she's been up to here. Yeah. Because it's been, as you said, it's been a couple of months because last time I went solo.
Yeah.
Cindy was out in Washington, D.C. I think you were up north somewhere. So I went solo, and we talked about third and fourth grade field trip that we did.
So next month will be it'll just be her. We'll just let her talk the whole
time. There we go. We'll let Cindy handle
it next
time.
Sit here and laugh and ask her questions.
So we'll go ahead and get started here. A little bit more laid back today. It's summertime, so this end of the semester's over. The pressure of the grades are all in and everything.
Are you in shorts today?
No, I'm not. I've got a short sleeve shirt on, but that's about as casual as I get, I guess.
I rolled my sleeves.
Okay.
As far as I got.
So we'll go ahead and get started this time. Got a good show for you. Mike's back here, and we're going to have a fairly lengthy security spotlight section. We've got major things in the last 2 months to share with you that I'm sure all of you have heard in the news. Just to mention Heartbleed, eBay has been hacked, Apple iOS is having some ransomware issues, and IE Internet Explorer has got some vulnerabilities in there. So we'll bounce around some of those issues and things, and you know how to protect ourselves against some of the malicious things going around. And then I'm going to share, I recently attended a Faculty Summer Institute up at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, and I did a presentation up there, so I'll share a little bit about what I did, as well as just kind of give an overview of some of the things that we learned up there. So we'll go ahead and get started. So here we go. Begin this month's podcast with our security spotlight, and it's been a couple months, Mike, since you and I've been back together.
Yes, so it's probably going to be maybe a long security spotlight.
Yeah, a lot has certainly happened in these last 2 months that you know you and I have time to talk about from time to time. But for our audience, I mean, it really has been very active the last 2 months. So I guess I'll just throw out the one that was in the news month and a half, 2 months ago, and I'm sure many of in our audience heard about the Heartbleed issue.
Yeah, that was a pretty major scare across the world. You know, it wasn't really a hacking exploit, but it was from an open source programming called OpenSSL. It's an open source program that helps companies or users to apply security certificates to servers and do secure socket layer transmission. I think I got that. I always call it SSL.
So yeah, SSL.
But it was just a bug in the code, this open source code, that had actually flown under the radar for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then actually a security firm found the exploit and then reported it, which caused some...
Alarm bells went off on the internet.
Right. Well, it also caused some controversy in the security world because, yes, it was good that they told everyone that this exploit exists and it doesn't look like hackers have been using it. But when you do that to tell all the security experts that this is happening, there's no like hidden society of information security professionals out there.
Right.
So now all your hackers know about this exploit, and then they rush to use it.
That first week that it was announced, there was a lot of back and forth because typically, here's the advice you'll get from the IT people.
Right.
Change your password now.
Right.
But then I saw several articles that week. No, don't change your password because it may be susceptible to this vulnerability and they might not have the systems patched. Therefore, they might be able to.
The quick version of what it was secure socket layer encrypts your transmission, the information you're submitting across the internet or across your network. With this vulnerability or this actually bug in the code, it was actually passing that information in clear text so anyone could see it,
right.
With a what they call a classic man in the middle attack. So
right.
You could be in the middle of the
capturing packets and seeing things.
Right. So if you rush right out and change your password, the systems were still transmitting the information in clear text. So you had to wait for the companies to actually update the servers. We had the patch. Trying to remember because it was a month and a half ago and it's been busy, and they pushed an update and patched it, and then but any server sitting behind that main server in the data stream had to have the certificates passed as well, even though they weren't using OpenSSL. We use a private company for most of our certificates.
Now, for the average day user or a teacher out there, sometimes, you know, we need to step back and it's like we get real technical here and going on. But what does this mean for the end user? It goes back to what we've been saying all along about this. You periodically need to change your password. You need to make routine and periodic backups because there are bad guys out there wanting to do bad things.
Right.
Not specifically targeted to you, but they're just trying to grab systems, whether they want to make a botnet and spam a whole bunch of people or, you know, Bitcoin's a big thing where, you know, they'll try taking over something and mine for Bitcoin.
Right.
So, you know, this malicious behavior, unfortunately, is, just part of it. So one of the reasons I want to talk a little bit about this and explain this a little bit from a security standpoint is not to have everybody's eyes glaze over, but to realize there is a reason, you know, that we ask you, you know, periodically to, you know, change the password, make your routine backups and things, just standard IT practices.
Right. And the other big one now is to make sure you don't have the same password for multiple accounts. From the next one on your list here that no one else can see is eBay was hacked.
Mm-hmm.
eBay was hacked. You know, and go in and change your password. But what's usually, right next door to eBay? PayPal, right?
Oh, yeah.
PayPal accounts are, you can link your PayPal account usually to eBay.
Yeah, juicy target for hackers. And then, it can get some money.
Because PayPal is really just a financial service.
Yeah.
So, we even tweeted that is your PayPal account password the same as your eBay account password? Well, the hackers now have access to your financial information because that's probably every hacker. The next step is to go see if that username that you got from eBay and that
and
password.
See, as you say, eBay and PayPal are kind of joined at the hip.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I forget that they're two separate services when it comes to eBay. So that's why you need to have unique passwords for everything. And then, of course, then it gets hard.
It's hard. Yeah. Everything, it seems like you have to set up a user account and, like I said, just kind of have a system. And I'm just almost to the point, I've done it in the past, then I backed off of it, one of those password managers.
Right. And those are actually kind of, at first you're like, oh, well, it's one centralized point for all your passwords. How is that any different than writing it down on a sheet of paper and keeping it on your keyboard? Well, you have to have a password to access your password manager, so you should make that a very unique, strong, powerful password. Apply multi-factor authentication to it. Have the system send you a text message with a certain 4-digit PIN that's only good for 30 seconds or something like that. Two-factor authentication is, you can do that with Twitter and Facebook now.
Mm-hmm.
Google, and Google has it now too, and Apple.
Yeah.
They have all of that.
Yeah.
You need to really start applying that because passwords just aren't a good security tool anymore. We've kind of moved past that point.
Yeah.
That just having a password itself isn't good. It's kind of like just having the normal lock on your doorknob lock on your, now you need a deadbolt.
Right.
You need two separate keys to get into your house.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately. Another thing that's occurred over the last couple of months and something that was very high profile in the press, at least a lot of the blogs that I was reading, was Internet Explorer. Was it the NSA or the security agency, National Security Alliance, or somebody recommended, do not use?
Yeah,
and they've got a patch now, but.
Yeah, it was the Cyber Emergency Response Team, which is a federal government level type information security group. There was a major vulnerability in Internet Explorer, and the scary part was that 80 around 80% of the world uses Internet Explorer.
It's still that high?
I think that's what it was, but maybe I'm off on the statistics. But most of the statistics are made up on the spot anyway.
I think it's like around, it's just a little over 50, I think, now. But
I don't know. But, you know, Microsoft didn't actually release any type of timeline for patching.
Right.
But luckily, they pushed it out pretty fast, actually.
Yeah, I think it was in 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. But, yeah, that one was scary. I mean, but that one got a lot of what I like to call spotlight in the press.
Yeah.
Which, okay, you know, there's a whole bunch of other security issues.
Yeah, sometimes it gives people a false sense of security. Say, well, it's like, no problem, I'm using Chrome. Well, they didn't see the release from CERT the week before saying, oh, there's a vulnerability for remote code execution on Chrome.
Right.
You know, this is all software, and unfortunately, you know, there's going to be these vulnerabilities from time to time. That's why we have patches, and that's why there's so many patches. Sometimes the patches break something, you know, and opens up another hole. So, so just have to be careful all the time out there. Now, we were just talking again just here this week, so we kind of covered the 2 months topic here very, very broadly. But just this week, another thing that's popping up on the radar this week, started in Australia is where I started seeing it, but now then Apple. I'm seeing a lot of articles about hackers or somebody getting your iOS device and locking it and holding it for ransom.
Yeah, and I don't know all the particulars.
This is like the last couple of days.
Yeah, on that. And I'm sure more information should be released, but last week also there was that same talk about Android devices as well, that there was actually ransomware installed on your Chrome device.
And again, we probably need to back up with what ransomware is. Everybody's probably familiar.
Sure. Ransomware is a malicious exploit that usually CryptoLocker is an example of that, where it's encrypting your files. Sometimes it just causes it. The big main ransomware that was around for a while it froze up your computer where you couldn't do anything. And it said like you were looking, you know, the FBI was tracking you, and you needed to pay them money to get your computer unlocked, or you were going to go to jail. And ransomware is any type of malicious intent that requires you to pay some type of monetary amount to stop the malicious action. CryptoLocker was probably the big one in the news. Anything that holds something hostage, hence ransom.
Yeah.
Is considered ransomware, and usually the ransom is, I think, like CryptoLocker was $500. CryptoWall, which is a new variant, the end of April, was up to $1,000.
Yeah. So if these things happen, and they do happen, you know, unfortunately, in organizations and things, like we're fortunate to have you here, report that to the security team. Unfortunately, a lot of people will get scared. You know, they prey upon your emotions and things. They'll get scared, and you know, maybe they'll pay that $300 or $500, or give a criminal your credit card so you can get your information back, and there's no guarantee that they're going to be nice guys at that point.
Typically, they usually give you your data back, or the method to get it back, because
they want to keep the scam going.
Yeah. It just shows that you need to back up regularly. That's the important part, because that's really the only way to get it back, unless you want to pay them. And once you have some type of malicious software on your computer or something, it never seems to run quite right again. Mm-hmm. So it's just a constant fight.
Again, we do these security spotlights to kind of inform everybody what's going on. And as I said, there's been a lot of really high profile cases, those four that we just talked about, just over the last couple of months. And then I'm constantly seeing, different vendors and things, Target a while back, and some of the major retailers, and some of their point of sale systems, and getting credit cards. We just have to remain vigilant out there. And if you suspect something, as I said, we've got a security team here that we can go report, and we want to do that because we don't want it to spread to different areas of the organization.
Well, and I know like my group, it doesn't just have to be someone here at the university that has a question. I mean, it could be someone in the community or something. If they have questions or issues, especially in this field, they're more than welcome to contact us. Like we won't turn them away, because
the best defense against all this is just educating yourself.
Right. Education is the number one defense. You know, in spreading the knowledge of how to protect yourself is important too, because, you know, if someone in the local community gets hacked real bad, it could affect our network as well.
Right.
So, it's a chain reaction.
It's summertime, and that means that we're off to conferences for many of us here at the university level, and I was fortunate enough to attend the Faculty Summer Institute hosted by the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, just up the road here, about an hour, so I was very grateful to be able to attend that. And Mike, I thought I'd just kind of bounce some ideas, because I know you go to a lot of conferences and things, and it's all about the learning, and I was lucky enough to be a presenter at this conference, so I thought I would share some of what I presented, as well as some of the things I learned. And we had a very good showing for Eastern Illinois University. I think we had a little under a dozen people attend the conference. And it's really nice to get together with colleagues from other universities and kind of compare notes and things. So I really did enjoy it. I did a presentation. I think I called it Teaching and Learning with Tablets, the Next Generation. And I was sharing some of the things that that we're doing here at EIU. And I decided to do a little bit different presentation and kind of practice what I preach here. Instead of doing like a PowerPoint, I made a OneNote notebook and shared that one out with everybody. And I've learned a couple of lessons about that along the way. Had a very good showing. I think I had 50, 60 people attend my session. So it was well attended. And I had a lot of questions and interest. So I appreciate that. If you happen to be one of those that attended, thank you very much. The other thing at this conference, as most conferences, they had a hashtag, you know, to share for social media. And I participated mostly with Twitter. There was also a Facebook type group, but that's just my choice. I usually choose Twitter. And the hashtag was number symbol or pound symbol FSI 2014. So you can go out on Twitter and do a search for that and, you know, sharing things back and forth. But one of the lessons I learned was at the end, they wanted the presenters to upload their presentations, and they gave us a box account. So, you know, here again we go. Here's another username and password. So I signed up for, you know, the free box account and uploaded my presentation. I had exported my OneNote notebook as a PDF, you know, thinking that that's going to be the most universal format. You know, not everybody's a OneNote user. And that was just kind of a snapshot in time. And I also did share, if you use OneDrive, you know, a Microsoft account, and you put your OneNotes out in the cloud, I did make a view-only link, and I shared that, so I provided the participants a short URL, and I'm glad I did, because one of the lessons learned just so happened that this was last Monday is when I presented. On Tuesday, Microsoft had their announcement about, and I don't know if you were following the rumors or not, but I was dead set that we were going to have a Surface Mini.
Whoops.
Whoops. So, you know,
they pulled an Apple on you.
Yeah, they did.
An Apple Watch
secret,
on you.
Secret, yeah. So, you know, I had one section in my OneNote notebook, you know, it's like, well, this is great because here's another opportunity, because I was pushing the pen input, you know, and having being able to annotate over things. And, of course, the next day, Microsoft releases a Surface Pro 3, which is like a huge 12-inch tablet instead of this mini tablet that we were all expecting.
All the fun, twice the size.
Yeah. So anyway, but what was great, because I had shared that link, you know, and it's out in the cloud, I can update that at any time. So in fact, I mean, I can go out there today, and anybody in my session that has that link, if I make a change today, they see that change today. That's kind of the whole idea about this cloud computing and sharing our notes with students. And I shared some links. There's a couple of schools down in New Zealand that are being pretty proactive with OneNote and students sharing their notebooks with professors. And a professor can go in and make comments and, you know, just kind of.
Oh, yeah. I never even really thought of that.
It's
in
huge.
In the OneNote aspect, especially, you know, because in college we had lab journals, lab notebooks, you know, we'd have to turn those in every week, and the professor would, you know, kill us.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Because you were probably filling that notebook out the night before.
Yeah. And I had one professor who's like, any straight line, you needed to use a straight rule. And, everything had to be done in pen. So you made one little mistake. You couldn't rip out the page or just scratch out the piece. You had to put an X through the whole page and leave it in there and then start over.
Right. So this opens up a complete whole new realm of possibilities for teaching and learning in the feedback cycle and the learning cycle, because what it allows you to do, and we're getting Office 365 here at EIU, so I'd like to do some some work with some students, and we'll probably do a couple of pilot projects, but if a student would so choose to choose their notebook with me, and they can either give me view-only privileges, or if they so choose, they could give me edit privileges. And if they give me edit privileges, then I could, like, make a new section, or, you know, if they write something, I could go back and make a little comment or something. Yeah. Or vice versa, you know, if I, as the instructor, share my notebook, I could give my students view-only access, and then immediately when they walk out of class, they have a copy, an exact copy of all my notes in my OneNote notebook. So no more of this, you know, especially in scientific and engineering where we're going 1,000 miles an hour, you know, we've done it 100 times and it's a student's first exposure to this material.
Right.
You know, we spend so much time and energy, and that's mental energy, just writing things down. Whereas, you know, this is a philosophical difference here. It's like some people say, well, if I give them my notes, they're not going to take their own notes, you know, so what are they going to learn? But I'm kind of the opinion, especially for some of that higher level learning, is like, let's take that mental burden off.
Well, and that's interesting because, you know, when I was in my undergrad as an electrical engineer, you know, our professor still wrote the equations and the problems on the board and solved them on a chalkboard. And then I kind of just sat in on a few classes when I was up at U of I, a few years ago, and some of the engineering classes just dropped in to check them out just to see. And their PowerPoint presentations, I'm like, you're missing so much of the stuff. And now you could use OneNote with an overhead projector and sit there, and the professor, as opposed to on a big chalkboard, could sit there and just rewrite it.
That's the other thing that I did at the Faculty Summer Institute during my presentation. I've got a little VGA Miracast to HDMI converter. I took that, and I was taking a risk because, this is all nascent technology. But I was able to wirelessly present from my Surface Pro 2 tablet through the projector, and we had very nice projectors. This was a very nice hotel up there, and they were set up technology-wise, as you can imagine, at U of I. But we had dual screens in this room, and I was projecting wirelessly, and literally what I was writing, you know, the students were seeing in real time. The other advantage, at that same time, it was being recorded in that OneNote notebook, so the participants get that link.
So was your audience students?
No, this is faculty.
Okay. All right.
University professors mostly.
Mostly. Okay. It was just interesting to see if they actually had some students there too. But yeah, I mean, using the Miracast and the Surface tablet, in April I spoke at a conference. It was the Midwest Lifelong Learners Conference that actually Eastern sponsors. And I gave a presentation on safely engaging baby boomers with social media. And this was for a lot of colleges trying to promote lifelong learning, you know, learning for your life. And they wanted to use like Twitter and Facebook to actually engage these baby boomers, to be more active in their programs. And actually that, and a little spoiler, my tech pick is a Surface Pro 2 that I just got in April, that my office bought for me in April. And that was the first week I had it, and I did all my presentation, everything on it, and as opposed to having to take a thumb drive and use the laptop that was provided with the projector, I just used the display adapter, plugged it right in, and I had no problems. Of course, it wasn't as cool as your Miracast, which is all wireless, but still, it was just seamless, and I just had the Surface Pro facing me on top of the projector with the screen behind me, and so now I had the presentation view.
Right, duplicate.
Duplicate view, presentation view in the new PowerPoint for 2013.
Mm-hmm. That presenter view is kind of cool, too.
Right, having the next slide already there so you can have a good transition from your current slide to the next one. But just that, just as this new technology, having the Surface Pro being a full laptop, a full OS, I'm not some type of, I guess what you want to say, restrictive like mobile type OS as opposed to a full Windows machine.
Right.
And just being able to do what you needed to do to give a presentation. I can just think of all the great advantages of this as a
instructor. That's what this conference was about, you know, with the teaching and learning and just pushing the ball forward and doing some new possibilities that this technology is making possible. And, you know, it is a bit cutting edge or bleeding edge, whatever you want to call. But I did have a plan B. My plan B was to use that VGA adapter if I had to plug it into the DisplayPort. I had that with me because you just never know. I mean, it was a foreign environment. You never know what you're going to get at a conference.
Right.
And also, the power to be able to print to OneNote, like you just mentioned, those PowerPoints, wouldn't it be great if you could, you know, send your students an email attachment or whatever, or share it in OneNote, already have it embedded within OneNote, and then the students have those slides, and if they have a tablet enabled with a pen, or even an iPad with the capacity of styluses and things, I mean, it's doable, it just doesn't give you the fine motor control that the Surface does. And then the other nice thing with OneNote is, you know, it's cross-platform. So if you choose to use Android or iOS or Windows, you know, you've got those three bases covered, which are pretty much the three major platforms out there now. The other thing I really noticed at this conference, you know, kind of some of our students rubbing off on us, is during the presentations, and, you know, I participated in several as a participant, I saw a lot of faculty get their cell phones out, and, you know, the presenter was up there with their PowerPoint, and somebody in the audience would get their cell phone out, take a picture of the PowerPoint slide, you know.
Yeah.
And the nice thing with the survey, I even did it a couple times. I know you're not supposed to take a picture with a tablet, but if you have OneNote open, it has a rear-facing camera, you open up OneNote and say insert picture and choose camera and boom.
Yeah.
You know, you've got those things. It looks a little goofy from time to time. But the you know, for again, it goes back to writing down, because there was a lot of good research shared out there about instructor online engagement. We had a good discussion on what makes online presence, what makes a successful online course. And there was some research presented about that. And, you know, To construct an online course, I mean, it does take a lot of work, and you really have to think about it from the student's perspective.
Right. Yeah, and you know, that's the other thing that you were saying, like, you didn't really bring up with the Surface Pro and everything, but you can sit there in your classroom and using your OneNote and everything, and you can just hit the microphone as well. And then record the whole presentation.
Video.
Yep, or video it, and then
as
go back.
As long as you have permission first, you know, you still need to ask permission for that.
Yep, but at least you'll have the, you know, you can just have at least the audio and go back and through the audio, take more notes on the notebook and, you know, and all that outside of class.
And that's only true on the Windows x86 side for that. It does not work. I've got the RT version of the tablet too. That does not work on the RT side. But it also, if you choose to index your audio, you can actually go out there and do a search for audio.
Yeah.
And it'll go out there, which is kind of cool, because if I'm talking about, I don't know, something unique, pink elephants, I can say, do a search for pink elephants. And if I'm recording the audio, it will jump to that point in the audio where you say pink elephants, and then it'll jump to where I'm writing my handwritten notes.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. Or some video analysis. I've seen people analyze videos, you know, like deconstruct things.
Right.
And if you want to say, you know, say it's a golf swing or something, it's like you want to jump to this point right here, then you can jump right to where, you know, coach's notes is or something out there. So, yeah, you know, these new technologies, I guess the thing that excites me about it at this conference is we're trying to move forward and not just do the same old things, because this technology is so powerful, and it can amplify, it can accelerate, and it's like, you know, there's bad things about it too. It can be distraction, you know, just like anything else, good and bad to everything. But how do we harness the power?
Well, the other thing, I'm not a huge fan, being doing some guest instructing here at campus, and then being, you know, haven't been out of the student side of the house very long, is that sometimes I don't like the fact that you never can really, class never really ends. Mm-hmm. Because if a professor forgets to send you something, they can always send it to you through email.
That's a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, as a student, that's a bad thing. As a professor, I guess that's a good thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a nice instructor when I teach. Because if I forget to tell you something in class, then it has to wait till the next session.
There were some discussions about that with flipped learning and things, you know, kind of the new buzzword out there for the last 2 or 3 years. Because, you know, flipped learning is here, watch this video and then we'll discuss it and stuff in class, but you're taking time out of that student's schedule to right. do that. So again, good and bad to that. And, you know, professors being professors and teaching what we love, we're very enthusiastic about it. And sometimes we can go a bit overboard on the homework and what we expect, you know, yeah. of some students. So I completely understand that as well. So overall, very, very good experience up there. I'm going to be working on some of the things that we had talked about up there. As I said, here at EIU, we are just now rolling out the Office 365 for students, so I need to get up to speed with that a little bit.
Actually, I think we're done
with the migrations.
Yes.
We're migrating the email, so wow. So we're off. It's almost, you know, June was the target date, so next week's June. Now it's up to us and to, you know, make the students aware of some of the powerful tools that they have and you know, hopefully make the learning experience a lot better. My technology pick of the week this week is a continuation of our discussion, and I'm going to choose something that came across my Twitter stream shared by someone. And this is a little, very short, 16-page overview, and it's called Go Paperless by Using OneNote 2013.
And it's funny that you know how many sheets of paper it is because you printed it out.
That's right. Go ahead. I was waiting to be ribbed for that a little bit.
Can't let that slide.
Yeah, I know. I do have it. It's bookmarked. I've got it in my Digo bookmarks, and I actually am going to print that into a OneNote for students. And I think we'll probably have to handle this voluntary. But if there are some students, you know, this summer that want to get a head start with the Office 365. OneNote is one of those products within that.
Yes.
So we could print that out, print it to OneNote, and then students would have it available to annotate over on top of it. We can start talking about sharing. Doesn't really have a table of contents. It'd be nice to find that in an HTML format a little bit more interactive, because that's actually a docx file if you go out there and download. I'll provide the link in the show notes.
But with the new Office 2013, it has section headings on the left-hand side. You just click
on that,
and it goes to the next
thing. But you have to have 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. But our students do now.
That's right.
That's the nice thing about the cloud. It's always going to be up to date.
But that's why there's no table of contents.
Mm-hmm.
Because
off. I didn't notice
they
that.
They don't expect you to print it out as well.
So. I know. You're going to give me a hard time about that, aren't you?
Yeah, maybe all the way till next month, too.
That's okay, because I've caught you a couple times with your little, what was the note program that you were using? Have you switched over to OneNote? You were using something with the iPad that did the palm blocking.
Yeah, Notability.
Notability, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I've switched over to OneNote. I'm actually switching my team. We've actually switched a lot of – we started doing a lot of in the military called continuity binders, but a lot of step-by-step guides on some of the tests we do that are unique to our individual positions, mm-hmm. so that if they're – out of the office for vacation,
that's nice.
Or anything. Exactly. We just load up this OneNote that we have saved on our network share.
And it's searchable within OneNote if you're looking for something.
Right. And you just click if we need a certain application or something that's saved on a different share, we can just throw the link right in there. We can throw the EXE file if it's a certain program that we need.
Yeah.
And then we can go in and modify. Everyone in my group can go in and modify it. So if they notice a process has changed, they just go in and
keep it up to date.
And then the initials are right there.
Yeah.
Who made the change.
That's also a very good point, because that's under the history tab, I believe, up on top and things, because you can see that. The other thing, you know, that most people, and I didn't have time to demonstrate during this presentation, but just the Office Online web apps and like Google Docs, you know, where you have multiple people editing, but you can see, it's in Office, it's your initials, I can't remember. Yep. In Google Docs, they've got some funny named animals, and then I think if you're logged in, you know, and see who it is. But you can do a lot of anonymous things too if you so choose to share it that way. I've used one or Evernote a long, long time ago, and it was just kind of a collection area. OneNote is just an analog equivalent to a three-ring binder, and that's just kind of the way that my mind is wired. And, you know, I kind of organize things by year, so whenever I start a new academic year, I start a new notebook, and, you know, everything's kind of belongs to that year. And then, you know, like I said, with students and things, you know, maybe they have a chemistry class, maybe they have English class. Each one of those can be a section.
Yep.
And then within each section, maybe each day of their class, they might even want to put the date, you know, today's date. And then they literally have a running total of everything throughout, you know, collectively. That's the nice thing about it. As I said, that interactivity is you're constantly, you know, the updates, you're constantly adding to it.
Right.
And then, of course, being computer, you want to periodically back things up in case some of those malicious attacks hit you. Right. And it's easy enough to do. You just have to make it a habit. And what I periodically do for the high value things that I do is you can export it as, you know, if you can just export just a section, or I believe you can just do a page, or you can do the entire notebook, or I periodically back it up to PDF if it's something, you know, I want to archive and keep. But once you take it out of that OneNote notebook functionality, you lose, you know, the navigation part of that. PDF's pretty much a flat file and kind of, you know, just kind of dead with the links. It's really nice to have those links within OneNote.
Right.
So I guess I've got it right here. I've got the paper copy of Go Paperless by using OneNote 2013. So I'll take that home and read it. Okay, so what do you have, Mike?
Well, mine's not really a new tech pick, but it's new to me for the most part. Is like I said, I got a Surface Pro 2. My office got it for me. You know, I'm trying to go as paperless as I can. I actually have 5 sheets of paper on my desk right now.
I'll go count them.
Yeah. It's less than the 16 you printed out. You know, my supervisor was like, you know, we should really practice what we preach. You know, we should get you a university tablet. And I was like, oh, that's fine, you know. And she said, well, what do you want? And I said, well, I mean, I guess I'll just get an iPad mini because that's what I'm used to. And she's like, well, do you want to branch out and try something new? And I'm like, yeah, sure, let's do that. You know, and then it kind of just dawned on me while I was sitting there at my desk on my computer that was running really, really slow, my desktop computer at my desk, was that I need a new desktop computer as well. You know, I've been nursing this one along for a lot longer than probably most people have on campus. Mm-hmm. So I kind of came to the conclusion, and I told my supervisor, I said, how about we give me a Surface Pro 2 under the stipulations that also on top of my desk is 4 monitors. And if the Surface Pro 2 can handle 4 monitors and drive everything with 4 monitors, because once you have 2, you never want to go back to 1. Once you have 4, you never want to go back to less. So I did some research, and I actually found some places online that some blog posts that people are doing it. Figured out what type of equipment I needed to actually do that, and actually it's great. It was one USB display extender hub. For the most part, it's a pluggable. It's bi-pluggable. I forget the exact model number, but it has 2 display ports out, a DVI and HDMI port out. It has 2 USB 3.0s out as well, and then 4 USB 2.0s and an Ethernet cable jack and headphone jack with that. With that, and then 2 special adapters by the same company that takes USB 3.0 and converts it to DVI, they have HDMI ones too. I can drive 4 external monitors. I have 4 24-inch widescreen monitors on my desk, and I can run all of those, a keyboard, a mouse, a USB hub, speakers, all that with 1 cable to my Surface Pro.
Just amazing what all goes through that cable.
Yeah, and it's to the USB 3.0 jack on the Surface Pro, not the extra display adapter, which is interesting. Now that I'm sitting here, I was wondering how many other monitors I could connect by using the display adapter.
You're going to melt the poor thing.
But, you know, like I said, it's 1 cable plus the charging cable, runs all that equipment. And the other great thing is now I don't have a big old CPU tower sitting under my desk like I've had. And I think you have a picture of it.
Yeah, actually. We can put a picture in the show notes out there. And I also, you know, before the show started, I invited you if you could do a guest post, because when I shared this up at Faculty Summer Institute, there were a lot of people interested. And it's like, but what I really liked was, you know, I gave him the nice clean shot. You know, as can a tablet replace your desktop PC? So, you know, here's the nice clean shot. And they said, oh, by the way, there are a few wires back behind here.
Yeah, there is.
And then there's your desktop computer.
Yeah. But, you know, the great thing is, too, that it is, I just have to unplug one or two cables on the go. To be on the go. You know, in that picture that you have of mine, it's different now, because just this week I did finally get a cover keyboard, the backlight cover keyboard, which I have transitioned.
Now, see, I still do like to have a full size, you know, what I call quote unquote regular keyboard. Especially, you know, that is meant for portable type use. If I'm doing like 8 hours of typing, I want a bigger keyboard.
Well, you know, and it's funny because I actually prefer the very thin, quiet keys.
I don't.
for my desktop computers. Uh-huh. So I'm actually really like this keyboard because it is the small, light, quiet keys. Where I've run into people like you that like I need
yeah,
the
with
big,
old school. It's like we
keyboard.
Have to hear them clunk whenever we push them down.
Right. Yeah. And I don't like that. But the only reason I never really liked laptops was one, the smaller screens, and two, the trackpad with the big, you know, the big armrest area that you would consider that you don't really have.
Yeah, the trackpad on that's not the greatest.
No, and I still do use an external mouse when I'm at my desk.
And that's the thing, you know, on the Surface Pro line is it's a 10.6. And in a desktop environment with 1920 by, you know, 1080, those are very, very tiny icons, tiny touch targets. So you do need the mouse.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm almost what we like to call fanboying on the tablet right now, the Surface right now.
We've not even talked about the Surface Pro 3 that was just announced this week.
And this is just the two. And, you know, it's just been talking to my partner and stuff. You know, she has a Mac Air and a Mac Air Pro or whatever that one's called, and we both have iPhones, and you know she carries both of those to classes and all this stuff. I'm like, you can just eliminate both those pieces of equipment and get a Surface Pro 2, and oh by the way,
because OneNote and use the pen
and then you know our home desktop computer is a PC.
We're going through another one of those evolutions, you know, like back in the late 70s, 80s, whenever we were transitioning from mainframes to the personal computer. Then we started networking, and then the internet came along, and now we're in this cloud computing age. It really is changing the paradigms. And, you know, the other, I've not even mentioned some of the other benefits of OneNote, is all you need is a browser, so you can go to any computer in the world, log into your OneDrive account,
right.
And there it is.
Yeah, and speaking about the, everything's changing right now, and we're also almost reverting back to that mainframe.
Back to the mainframe.
Because, you know, here in like your lab is VDI lab, uh-huh. And we're starting to expand that more and more on campus. Uh-huh. So really anything, any other external PC is really just a terminal now. And of course, as a security guy, that makes me very excited, because if you need to do secure work, sensitive stuff.
Or doing updates, you do it once and replicate it 30 to 50 times.
Right. And all that stuff is stored, you know, not locally on your machine, but it's stored on some server that's backed up daily. And, you know, on that, you know, your desktop and desktop environment gets compromised, you just.
Right. Blow it away, and start over.
Log out and re-log back in. So.
Yeah, but one reason that we're going through this is we've made these leaps, quantum leaps in the technology capability. And we need to wrap up here, but I want to learn more about the Surface Pro 3, because it is a full PC with up to an i7 processor. I mean, a full Intel i7 processor. I don't know, 8 gigabytes, 16 gigabytes of RAM. It is a full PC in a 9.1 millimeter thin frame. And you know, we've come to that point where the miniaturization has, you know, gotten small enough that, as you said, I mean, it can be a, and that's the way Microsoft's selling it. Now, you know, there's pluses and minuses to all of that. A lot of people are still going to want to have a tablet, you know, in addition, because a 12-inch tablet now is too big. You know, some people are saying that's too big.
Well, and you know, the next thing, you know, hopefully Microsoft will come out with the, you know, the 7-inch phone.
Yeah, right. I mean. But that's why you have the iPad mini, or I have a Nexus 7, you know, that very small form factor. Windows Toshiba just announced a $199 8-inch tablet coming out in July. So it's very exciting times. The only thing is, you know, that you don't have enough money to buy everything to test it out that you would like to. But we're just going through rapid evolution right now, rapid pace change. And like I said, I won't use the word revolution because this has been a continuum going along. But each step is we're enabling things that we couldn't do before if we can break out of the mindset of, oh, here's a PowerPoint, you know, or whatever. Yeah. So I'm excited about the possibilities. That wraps it up for episode 165 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
I'm Mike Joya.
Keep on learning.